All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 60 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, sports scientist. This week on the show, we're having a bit of a catch-up, recapping, like, what's going on in the world, what's going on with my training, Matt's Braecase software, and winning isn't everything. Matt's just won a race, but he's going to tell us that apparently it's not everything. So we'll delve into how to get the most out of your personal performances. As always, big shout out to our sponsors, Endurance Training Hub and Smart MTB Training. Online training software to help you become better athletes in your chosen sport. And also check out the Performance Advantage Podcast Masterclass. It's launched, it's live, it's online. PerformanceAdvantagePodcast.com for all of your masterclass needs. All right, let's get on with the show.
Hey, Will, how cool is it that the Performance Advantage Podcast Masterclass is now live?
Yeah, well, it was probably about 50 times more work than we anticipated.
Yeah.
So super stoked. There's some people, first weekend, already finished 6 modules, 52 individual videos. They've been awarded the Performance Advantage Masterclass Certificate of Completion.
What we do is we guide you through sports science, and we wanted to make sports science easy to understand, which is what we do on the podcast. Like, we don't give you a bunch of fluff and p-values, right? And talking about statistics and things like that. We just tell you the things that are important to know. And the aim of this course was to give you sports science that you can use to train more effectively. And so far the reviews are great. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's right. It's fun. It's definitely cool to have that done, have that out of the way and out there.
But what do you think, Will? When's our next course?
Oh, man, calm the farm. It's pretty exciting. Like, it's fun. It's fun building a course like that and putting the content together with you and presenting it in like the podcast format, which, apparently people enjoy. So it's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that was the whole thing. Like, we go on webinars all the time and, you know, watch other like learning materials and lectures. It's just so boring. Like, I don't want to sign up for something where I'm just going to, like, not see someone's face. I'm just going to, like, see their PowerPoint presentation and hear them talking. And you can tell they're just, like, leaning back in their chair, totally not into it, telling this for, like, the millionth time. Like, that is really boring. I don't think it's a good way to learn. So that's what we tried to avoid. Like, that's what we avoided because we were both
Yeah, and we put it into, I don't think there's a clip more than like 7 minutes. I think most of them around 3 to 4 minutes. Like, this is 2020, man. We're not going to be engaged for longer than like,
no,
you know, I'll be online and maybe watching, but I'm also messaging someone and maybe like figuring out what I'm going to have for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of things going on, so you can stop it whenever you want, start whenever you want. And like, it's actually a conversation about sports science.
Yeah. That's right. Well, we thought, like, we haven't done a few of our segments for a while, so we want to get into a couple of those. One of them is the Braecase update, which wasn't even Braecase when Matt was initially updating. It was the world's first brake power meter, which is now what's like fully commercialized as far as I'm aware. And what's going on there, Matt? What are you able to tell us?
Yeah, well, we had our Braecase press release go out on, I think, actually the same day as the course launched. So it was hectic few days there. But yeah, like, it's awesome. I was watching my website traffic and it was, you know, like, no one knew the word Braecase. So I was watching it, and suddenly, like, an article on Pink Bike, Vital MTB, and then some others, and then there's some bigger ones coming. And my web traffic went up like 2,000% or something like that. And that was pretty cool. Got lots of people pre-ordering. It's just amazing response. Just really grateful to, the sites that ran the article. It's really cool.
Well, I mean, that's a big change from multiple times where we've been on the phone. You've been like, oh my God, this fucking thing. Like, I wish it would just go away.
not go away.
I know, like it's a business. It's a startup, you know? Like, you go through that. We've started multiple things, and it's a journey. And now, like, you're on kind of the other end of it, which is awesome. Like, you've seen it through. Like, it's been a process. What, like, must be 6 years at least from the initial?
Yeah, it's been 4 years since we, you know, started talking about it, and we had that clunky prototype. So it's definitely a tough journey when you're not making money, and you know, for 4 years, and it's costing you, you know, like, we don't have to get into all that stuff, but that's just classic startup stuff, and it's tough. And you know, it's good to finally see people believing in it.
Yeah, well, it is the future. Like, that is the future of sport. Like, that's who we are. We're sports scientists. We love to bring that aspect of analysis to the everyday exercising public. That's why we started this podcast. That's why we have our businesses. Like, I think when you understand the fundamentals of sports science, physiology, biomechanics, and all of that, it makes your training more fun, more enjoyable. These, like, you know, few $100 devices we have on our wrists or on our handlebars, like, when you understand what they're telling you, and you can utilize something like Training Peaks, Strava, like, to analyze it, you're like, wow, this is really cool. I'll tell you a piece of feedback I got from the webinar I just did, Endurance Training Hub, was he said, I can't believe I'm so involved in a sport and yet know so little about so many, like, important aspects. So this was on endurance sports nutrition. So essentially how...
Oh, yeah, I was at that one.
How to fuel during your endurance sport, right? And rather than just saying you need 60 grams of carbohydrates per hour, I kind of said, like, this is different types of carbohydrates, this is why you need them, and this is how you could go low carb and avoid needing them as much, but still, yeah, all of that. The science, right? Like, you enjoyed some of the diagrams, but similar stuff to what we've done in the course. It's just, when you understand that, you're like, this is kind of fun. I now know how to read the back of a packet. I now know how to plan these, like, the demands of my event nutritionally. And I can do that by myself. I don't need to, you know, recruit an expensive nutritionist or anything. I'm learning. I'm understanding. And it's actually not that hard. Okay, Matt, well, I ran a marathon on an athletics track over the weekend.
Oh, boy. So, is this in prep for your 24-hour run?
It is. Yeah, so it was the first of, I'm not sure exactly, I need to, like, sit down and really hammer out my plan. I've just finalized my racing season, I guess, which is cool, you know? Like, we haven't been able to solidify these races for a long time. And so now I've got the Rotorua Marathon in September. November is 24-hour champs, and then the Kepler Challenge, which is like a mountain trail run, is in December. And as my wife pointed out, I was like, yeah, it should be fine, you know, from 24 hours to 60K mountain trail run. I've got 5 weeks, so it'll give me enough time to, like, recover. I won't be fully prepped, but I can at least get a couple specific sessions in, be good to go. She's like, you know, it's like 2 weeks after your race. And so, you know, have you ever done that where you, like, have something in your head and you've just decided that's, like, that's the time, that's the time frame, or that's when something is?
Yeah.
You know, and then you turn up to a meeting, like, 5 hours late. You're like, oh, why did I?
Yeah. I showed up to your house for a meeting and you're like, oh, we're not actually even meeting. Do you remember that? It was, like, really early in the morning, too.
Yeah.
Classic.
Classic, Matt. Yeah. So anyway, in my head, I was like, yeah, cool, 5 weeks. And then, we found out it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Okay, so you're going to do 24-hour event and then straight 2 weeks later,
yeah. 3 weeks, yeah. 3 weeks later, I have a 60K mountain trail ultra. That's
probably be all good.
I don't know. Who knows? But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, Matt. Yes, I did 4 hours around an athletics track. at just around 4:30 a.m. I guess it was, in prep for my 24-hour run. That was the last podcast. You can go back, check that out. We talked about some of the demands of it. And yeah, so just went out, set myself heart rate limit 140, which is super low. That's upper zone one, lower, like the lowest zone two for me. And went and did it, and did 4 hours, did a marathon on an athletics track, and it was all good. It was far better than I thought it would be. So that's...
Did you change directions? Like halfway through, you're like, I'm going to go the opposite direction.
No, because they change in the race, they change directions every 4 hours. So I didn't want to like, you know, I didn't want to go against what they do. I want to see what it felt like to run one direction for 4 hours. Yeah. And once you put your mind to the task at hand, right? So I know I'm going to be running around an athletics track, so there's no point thinking about it. You know, all the comments I got, which was an overwhelming amount of support from the last podcast, which is cool. People are super interested in like this task, this like endeavor of how far can you run? You know, because I think 400 meters, everyone knows a 400 meter athletics track. Like we've all jogged around one of those at some point in time in our life, and everyone knows 24 hours. Like when you say 100K trail run with 2000 meters elevation, people are like, I don't really get, you know, how long does that take someone like you? I don't know.
Like, yeah, cool, bro.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's for you. Is that easy? I don't know. When you say 400 meters, they're like, yep, I know an athletics track. And you say 24 hours, they're like, I know one day. Yep. And then you say, I'm doing do that running. And they're like, what? And I think it captures the imagination a bit better. So yeah, yeah. But once you switch off to like the athletics track side of things, that's what you're doing. No point thinking about it. It's just what you're doing. That wasn't anywhere near as hard as I thought. I thought it would really be challenging just going round and round, but you just don't even really think about it. I enjoyed like having access to my water bottles and nutrition and stuff, just, and like, oh yeah, well, I'll do, because I was doing 19 and one run walk, like, oh yeah, in two more laps, I'll walk. And it was just simple stuff like that, which is super easy to break down. And it was quite cold, but otherwise, yeah.
How long did it take?
What?
To do that?
4 hours. So I said.
So you only have to do five more of those.
Six. 6 fours of 24. Yeah. Six more.
Yeah, so five more of those.
Five more. Six times as far. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I need to... I was like, oh, yeah, I could probably do this one for 4 hours. I'll do the next one 6 hours. I'll do the next one 8. But I could have done 2 hours then on that day and have it not really be a problem. What I need to find the problem. I need to find how hard physically, mentally, nutritionally things are going to get, so I can figure out how much I'm going to slow down. Because like I could do that, right? I did 4 hours. I slowed down a little bit. My heart rate jumped from like around 130, just below 130, to just below 140. And I was having to slow down a bit to keep it under the 140 limit. And that means like in another 4 hours, am I going to be like having to slow down a lot, which means I'm going to have to start even slower, you know, do a more condensed run walk, because the pace I was starting at obviously was too fast. And if I'm going to slow down 10% over 8 hours, you might want to extrapolate that out to 30% over 24 hours or something like that. And so I can't afford to slow down that much, have to start slower. So yeah, I need to find that point. But then you also don't want to go out and run damn near half the distance just to find out how much I'm going to slow down. At some point, you just need to stop.
I mean, I think the only way to figure it out is to just do it. You know, you can't expect to have it dialed for your first time, right?
Nah, definitely not. But one thing I wanted to ask you was like around the training effect of the in a task like that. So I'll do these track-based runs, which are super easy. My average heart rate was 126 for 4 hours running, which is like ridiculously low for running. And I was like, I'm not too much considering them as training per se, but rather than, I don't know what to call it, experience. Why? Well, you know, obviously, why? Like, it is training, but I don't see that the main, I'm not trying to gain fitness from it. I was trying to explain it because Emma goes, oh, like, you did it really easy. I thought you would have done more of a zone two run, you know, which I would have done if I was trying to gain fitness, like aerobic fitness, because the bang for buck over a 4 hour run would be far better if I was to speed up a bit. But that wasn't the task. So, like, yes, there's a little bit of fitness gain, but I see it more so as like an experience specificity style training session. I don't know. I wanted to like kind of get your feedback on my thought process around that.
Okay. So actually, relevant story. Remember when we went to that conference in Vienna, the sports science conference, and I decided I was going to bike to the conference from where the heck was it? Amsterdam?
Germany, yeah.
Yeah, like it was pretty far, right? And I did it in 10 days.
Netherlands? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was Amsterdam. I rode from Amsterdam to Vienna, and it was a long way. I had 11 days to do it, and what we did before I left is we tested my fitness. Do you remember that? With Joe?
Yeah,
we went in the
yeah.
lab, and we did the gas analysis and did steady state. So we exercised that for 5 minutes at different power outputs, measure the gas, measure my economy. And then I did a VO2 max test after that, just to kind of see what was happening. And then I did that long ride. I was riding like, I don't know, like 10 or 12 hours every day for 11 days. And it was all really, really easy.
Yeah.
Like, cause I had my power meter. So I think I averaged like 100 or 120 watts, and it was super easy. But then we came back and tested my fitness, and like everything had improved.
Yeah.
Just after like all that really, really easy riding. And that's been my experience, like in doing bike touring, like you're going so easy cause you know you have to do it again the next day. And it's so easy that when you're doing it, it doesn't really feel hard at all. But if you do that for like a week, 10 days, 6 weeks, like that's a massive, massive training load.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
So, you know, I'm wondering though, like, so we know that that works. I'm wondering, since you are going so easy, can you just maybe do more of it?
Well, definitely. And this is that was kind of the thought. Like, I had no idea where this 4 hour marathon, any 4 hour run I've done, I've been pretty poked by the end of it, you know, because I've ran more at a more steady state, like zone two pace, like a running pace for me, whereas this, I felt more jogging. And the next day I went for a run with James in the pram. It's an hour run through like, and he was in a running pram, and we went on just like the fire roads through the forest. Felt amazing. Like it would have been a 20K zone two run, you know? So, and that's why I'm saying, like, in terms of bang for buck, I could have gone and done 2 hours and I think I would have got the same effect, because I still wouldn't have been in like the gray zone or like really thrashing myself. I just would have been training at a better like sweet spot training intensity. So that's why I'm a lot more comfortable jumping into 8 hours sooner than I would have anticipated, because the demand does not seem to be there as much. And if I was... Yeah, and so that's where I'm thinking, like, if we look at, say, like, something like a TSS, like a training stress score, then, yeah, I can get both the data that I need and the specificity that I need in terms of gathering the information for the event, and then the training effect that I need as well, while maintaining consistency.
So these are, like, two things that we talked about in our course, actually. And the first one is... Be careful with TSS, because it's not like the end-all be-all, right?
And so that's training stress score within the Training Peaks training software, yeah.
Yep. And we really went into depth there, so we won't go into depth in it now. But, you know, the other thing is, don't forget, like, endurance pace, we talked about when we talked about training zones, is, like, zone one's actually okay.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely okay fine.
Like, I know I'm still like, that's just, I still ran for 4 hours. You yeah. know? It's, like, there's fitness, definitely.
I mean, yeah. I could recommend a good course for you so you can be confident in this kind of strategy, actually.
Thanks. Oh, I just wanted, like, I was interested in your feedback, and I thought, well, I might as well ask you on the podcast because it'd be a good discussion point.
Yeah, I think, you know, keep that up, and you'll get that loading that you're, that's going to probably be the hardest part. Like, the fitness-wise, for the 24 hours, that's not going to be the limiting thing. The limiting thing is going to be all these things that annoy you. Yeah, throughout. So you need to
the conditioning
at least do some longer stuff. But if you're going in zone 2 for 8 hours,
oh man, I'd be,
yeah, I think
that's,
you're going to be
that's
too
like
wrecked.
That's ultra race pace.
Yeah, yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, yeah. Even though it's like, yeah, it's a sustainable intensity. Theoretically, there are like time limits to these things.
Yeah. Plus the increased loading. You know, cycling you could probably do it, but you're like just by going from zone 1. Pace to zone 2 pace, suddenly you have like, I don't even know what the difference in loading would be because of your velocity's higher.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no braking force and everything. All right, yeah. So that's my training update. Oh, yeah, there'll be a video on my YouTube channel as well. YouTube, Dr. Will O'Connor. So I put a video up there and I'll do, and there'll be an analysis of that as well, just in terms of like how my heart rate spiked and, like continue to increase with the kind of slow component there. But anyway, I'll talk about that.
So you're doing like a video every week on your journey to that 24 hour?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All around the training and the analysis of my training and these kind of things. So I'll touch on it a bit like on the podcast, but visually is always way better.
Yeah. Sweet.
All right, Matt, we probably got a bit of ahead of ourselves because we wanted to get into this week in sports that we talk about segment. We're bringing back a little bit because sports starting to come back. And one thing I wanted to have a bit of a discussion about was the virtual Tour de France.
Yeah, so you mentioned this to me briefly before. I know nothing about it. That's all you said, actually, is we're going to talk about the virtual Tour de France. I don't know anything about this. It sounds ridiculous. Please tell me.
Yeah, so it's like a partnership between Zwift and the Tour de France, and all the Tour de France teams are in it, and they have, like, it's really weird how they work it out, because you can only race, like, 4 members of your team, but you can interchange them throughout the 6 races, and there's not, like, the overall time. Like, in the Tour de France, you know, you just have the time to finish, and it's cumulative time, and the person with the fastest time overall wins. And this, it's like a whole bunch, it's based off of like points. So you have, and team points. So you have the individual, because one individual can't do the whole series. So it's all about the team aspect of it. And there's sprint, KOM, like King of the Mountain and Queen of the Mountain, and then overall winner. And you have, yeah, four riders, and then there's men's and women's going on at like the same time within like, kind of the same coverage, but you have 1 hour. The races are about 1 hour each, a little bit less. And you have the women's race, then the men's race, which is super cool because it's kind of like finally for something like cycling, they're starting to identify that women actually like are competing in this. Yeah. Like, in the same sport at the, like on the same equipment over the same course.
Oh, that's really cool. I'm looking at it now, like I'm looking at the teams list, and it's like all the recognizable jerseys that you'd expect to see in a big race like this. Sunweb.
Yeah, and they've changed like the Zwift coding so that it's not, doesn't look so much like Zwift. It looks a lot more like the Tour, like with the hoardings and the yellow and like race numbers, which they don't normally have. There's a bunch of stuff, and it's so cool. And I really, like I've mentioned on this podcast a lot about my thoughts around the virtual world of, I don't know, training or racing or athletics, because I see it as the future. And you have people like Peter Sagan, you know, you must know who he is, Matt.
Yeah, he's like the man. He's like the coolest guy in cycling, for sure.
So he just went on, I'm not sure if it was on Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat or TikTok or whatever, but he's like, I'm a real cyclist. I'm not a virtual cyclist. I'm not taking part.
Oh, wow. Okay. And they probably aren't paying him enough.
I'd say so. And it's a pretty big name, right, to say something like that. But then I was also like, man, like you can only think back in history where people have been like, this isn't a real thing, you know? and then the other dinosaur on the bike, completely out of the public eye because they didn't want to grasp technology. Mm. So you see, like, most of the big names are in there, and they're probably already using Zwift or some kind of, like, even indoor trains is just the way of the future now. And whether you want to acknowledge it as a racing platform or not is, I don't know. That's up to you. But I think you can't ignore it as a platform. But then, yeah. You know, that's my opinion. That is purely my opinion. And then when I have a look at the views on YouTube, because it's live streamed on YouTube, I was extremely underwhelmed with like the 50,000 views on the first stage of the tour. And the tours, along with the Olympics, Tour de France, along with the Olympics and the Football World Cup, not sure, there must be some other larger events, Cricket World Cup. I was actually talking to my dad about these kind of events, largest in the world. Tour de France is up there. It's top five.
Yeah.
So you would have thought there would be a big, cohort of that just watch the online one. But it's not.
Yeah, I actually have wondered that too, because to be honest, like the TV coverage. Like
you had no
sucks.
Idea.
Yeah.
You had no idea it's on.
Yeah, I didn't even know this was happening. It's, maybe I just blocked it from my mind. But, yeah, I don't know. It's, well, that's cool. It's cool that they're at least doing something and not just saying, hey, no tour this year.
Well, they're saying it's on. They're saying the end of August to September.
Oh, what?
They're going to host the Tour de France.
Oh, my God. There's so many things happening. I'm, like, not even up to date at all. So, they're having a virtual tour, and then they're having an actual tour. And, like, it's just going to be the year of the tour, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
okay, that's great.
Allegedly, you know, or yeah, not yeah. allegedly, but, like, they're saying they're holding it in August in Europe through, like, three different countries. So, we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
Anyway, it's great watching. I really recommend like throwing it on. Most, you know, you got Chromecast, Smart TV, Apple TV, whatever. Throw it up there. Like the commentary is really good. The coverage is really good. It's not 20 hours long. It's like 50 minutes. And another real cool thing, if you're like Matt and I, love a bit of data, heart rate, cadence, speed, and power.
Nice.
And watts per kg. So, it's just way more engaging. Obviously the scenery is not there, but it's something to get your like endurance sports fix for now. Yeah. And that was kind of what I wanted to update. Cause I think like you, Matt, most people have no idea this is on. All right, Matt, did you have anything you want to cover in this week in sports that we talk about?
Yeah, well, in coming up in a couple of weeks, one of the major sporting feats that is going to go down is length of New Zealand triathlon. So
that's right.
We're actually joining up with Kieran McPherson. He is the man of home Ironman fame, where he did like an off-road Ironman, like not just an any Ironman. He was running on gravel and he did mountain bike for Ironman distance in a pool that he dug. Right, so that got a lot of legs, and that media went kind of all around because that was so incredible. But you know, Kieran decided what he wants to do is a triathlon every day across the whole length of New Zealand.
Yeah,
and that's coming
right.
up soon.
Yeah, we just had a big meeting yesterday with all like the contributors and everything. So we'll be starting in Bluff, which is the bottom of the South Island of New Zealand, and the only means of transport Kieran will have to get himself to Cape Reinga, which is the very top of the North Island, is triathlon. Swim, bike, run.
Every day.
Every day. And so we'll have a camper van, he'll sleep in that, at the point at which he stops, and we start, boom, straight on the same point again. And that's how he's going to get himself up the country.
So how far is it from Bluff to Cape Reinga?
It's like it's like 2,500 kilometers.
Okay.
It's like equivalent to 10 Ironmans.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's aiming for like between 12 to 14 days, about 2 weeks to do that, around 150 kilometers a day, around 100 miles of self-propulsion per day in the middle of winter.
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty cool, and we'll have we have some support from a documentary team following him around, and no doubt there's going to be some things that need to be done to his bike, and we'll be analyzing his data every day, his power data, his heart rate data, putting that stuff on YouTube, and then at the end of it, we'll have a cool documentary.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun. Keep an eye out on that. You can follow along at lengthofnewzealand.com. So that's lengthofnewzealand.com. Otherwise, check out mine or Matt's social media, and there'll be a lot of updates coming over the next few weeks around that. Now to the main topic, main discussion of the week. Winning isn't everything. Matt brought this up to me last night after he was bragging about how much, you know, he won his race. And he's like, you know what? As a champion guy and a recent winner of the local cross-country event, I want to tell people from my high horse that winning isn't everything, guys.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel fulfilled right now, even though I definitely won.
Yeah, you know, I was like standing there as a champion saying, you know, being humble is really the way to go. You know, we should all be humble like me. No, like, okay, so let me just talk about it for a second and why I kind of came to this. Okay, so we had a race 2 weeks ago, the first race back, and I was saying how I wasn't even going to go because
when we had Jay on the show,
Yeah, so I don't think we did a podcast since then. So I went to the race and, you know, race went like pretty good. I just focused on what I could, fueling, hitting the corners as nasty as possible, and just riding really efficiently. And the race ended up going like, okay, like my power was definitely down because I'm not, my fitness isn't where I wanted it to be, but the race, you know, went okay, and I got faster every lap, which is cool. So 2 weeks later, we had the next race in the club series, and same course, everything, and there was just happened to be a road race on the same time. So everyone that beat me the 2 weeks before was now at the road race.
All right.
So, you know, the race starts, and suddenly there's four fewer people in front of me, and that means, you know, I'm in the lead. And so I was telling you this, and you're just kind of laughing at me. And
what a champion.
Yeah. So, you know, like, so how do I even process this as, you know, someone competing in an event? Like, I can't really consider myself a champion, right? It just sounds funny, you know, because you're not used to me talking about, like, winning. I don't remember the last time, like, I won a race. It was probably, like, 4 years ago when I was, like, actually quite fit winning the events. And it's just kind of funny. And then I'm thinking, like, if this is, you know, and then we talked about, like, you know, some people may never actually win.
Most people won't
ever win a race. And like, I didn't want to like say like, I don't want to be like, hey, you know, like I won this race and, you know, I'm making a joke of it, because that's definitely not the case. But I'm thinking, you know, for myself, I need to focus on myself, because I know that there are much faster people than me, and they just happen to not be there on that day. So for me, when I'm looking at the race, I'm thinking, okay, here are the things that I set out to do anyway, and here is how I normally perform. I need to be looking at this event, comparing myself 2 weeks ago. And yeah.
And how did it compare?
Well, I have a power meter, which is great, and that's an easy thing to compare from, of course, from day to day on the same course, which is really good. So I can look at my power and look at my pacing between laps And the course was slightly different. There was a little bit of a new section. And so I went back and I looked at my power. And I was like, hey, like, actually, my power was slightly higher than it was 2 weeks ago. On average and across each lap. I was like, actually, you know what? This was a slight improvement. So for me, comparing myself to myself, this is a win.
Yeah, right? And you shouldn't... Also, like, we make fun of it because you won. But you still won. You know, and
you made fun of me for winning.
Okay, you didn't make fun of yourself. That's fine. Or it's just maybe the use of the word champion. Now, if you win, I used to feel like this as well. It's kind of like an imposter syndrome, where you may there's world class athletes out there, and you know you're not one of them. And so when you win a race, you kind of think, oh, yeah, but I'm not, you know, I'm not even, this guy wasn't there and this guy wasn't there and this lady normally turns up and all of that. It's kind of like whatever. On that day in that race, you were the fastest individual and you won. And you need to take that and appreciate that that was how it played out. And that's an awesome feat and achievement for yourself, because you still had to not stuff it up. That's what people, you know, sometimes forget in that situation, whether it's an age group win, whether it's like, you know, a gender or overall, whatever kind of win it is. And then you can look at your data, you know, and to say, okay, well, how does this compare as well? Because there's lots of different ways you can skin a cat, I guess, where, like you said, your power was better. So that's really good. And then you don't know what could have happened where, like when you and I raced, I went the wrong way. Maybe everyone went the wrong way. Do you still, like, where do you stop to say that you didn't win something? Right? Yeah. Like the, it's a really cool thing on YouTube where there's like there's four people in ice skating, and speed skating. That in the final, and this guy's tactic, because each way from he was like the worst ranked in the whole Olympics for speed skating, and every single one his like tactic was just not fall over, like that was his thing, and he won the gold. He like it's just an incredible story about how the worst ranked skater didn't stuff up, and everyone else was so competitive they like knocked each other over and everything, and he won. So you're gonna call that guy like, yeah, you got the goal, but you don't deserve it. It's like his tactic worked. Whereas he's out and out, not the best. But then, yeah. Anyway, man.
Yeah. it's just like how I think what we need to do as competitors, and we need to just somehow come up with a good way to process this kind of thing and use it to our advantage to continue improving. And I haven't quite like figured out like what to do. So I can look at my power and I can get the takeaways of things that I can work on to improve. But
like the contrast of it is, Matt, I'll present that to you. What if you came 10th and your power was way better?
Yeah.
How would you feel about that?
Great. That's a great question. For me, I would be happy. And actually, I might be happier.
I reckon you would be. Yeah. 100%, because you wouldn't feel this anxiety of like being judged for winning.
Yeah.
Because you know you're not like you, the fast people weren't there, whereas no one else even cares. And you would purely be concentrated on your outputs, mainly because you're like that data guy, right? And this is where we need to figure out what we're looking at, because you could have ridden horribly, and the only reason your power's high is because you were so badly paced, and you were handling your bike horribly, braking too much in the corners, accelerating too hard, like just doing all the like, and you came 10th with a higher power because you just didn't race so well, and then you look at your number and you go, "There's my number. My number's better. You know, I don't care about the rest of the race." I have an issue with that sometimes as well, where I'm so concerned about my own output that maybe I could have performed better if I had taken myself out of that context.
Yeah.
You know, and in cycling, the more Zwift racing I do, it is 100% about your power output. That's all the whole algorithm drives on. is power. And I see at the end of the race on social media, in Instagram stories, Facebook posts and everything, I just see people screenshotting their power outputs. No one screenshots the race results.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, 100%. Because, like, no one's even concerned about winning. They just want really high power outputs. And and that's the same as what happens, Matt, where you then go, yeah, but you're not, like, you were off the front for 20 minutes and then you got dropped and you had your best power output, but it's just like a horrible tactical race.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a win.
No. Like, no.
But then in performance, like physical exertion, you physically exerted the most.
Yeah. Racing is different than fitness. And that's where, like, the Zwift thing is, like, on this weird, I don't know, I'm not even sure where it lies, because it's, like, I know you said there's, like, some drafting and some, I don't even know what the heck, but, you know, it is about your watts per kg. Like, higher watts per kg, and you're probably get the win, right? But whereas, like, racing is a lot different, and especially, you know, mountain bike racing. I remember we talked about some road cycling power profiles, and some of the pros are averaging, like, incredibly low power during the road races just because they're so efficient. They're saving their power output for when it actually matters, right? Not, like, just dragging the bunch along.
If you go back and listen to the interview we did with Robert Stannard, professional rider for Mitchelton Scott on the Pro Tour, he's like, oh, I don't really care. You know, he wants to win. It doesn't, like, he needs, it's a good reference. Like, he holds it there. Like, just like anything, like a benchmark. Like, oh, yeah, I need to test my fitness and I don't have any racing but for the most part, he's like, I want to do as little as possible and then as much as possible and win the race. And he's not even, and in that sense, that's what's, that is what you need. Right? But then what happens, Matt, when you're in the middle of the pack? Winning's not an option. And maybe time isn't a factor because it's not a time trial. It's a trail run. It's a mountain bike race. It's just a bike race. Like, it's like, well, where you sitting in this purgatory of, like, what am I supposed to use for a gauge of my performance?
Yeah, that is so tough. I don't know. We just need to really focus on ourselves. And that's, like, the only option. But one of the difficulties that I had is you're in the race and you're focusing on yourself, right? Because that's kind of the only thing you have to worry about. So I had someone in the older age groups, they started 2 minutes behind. I could see him on the trail. I was using him to kind of push me. But when I couldn't see him, you know, we're pretty much exactly the same time. When I couldn't see him, I was like, how do I motivate myself to keep going? Right? So when you're in the mix, it's easy to motivate yourself. But instead, all I could do was focus on my power output and be like, okay, I need this to get this as high as possible and hit the turns as fast as possible. Like, so how do you stay motivated there when you kind of find yourself in no man's land? And, like, the only thing you can focus on is, you can't focus on winning, but the only thing you can focus on is yourself. Like, how do you keep going?
Yeah, this is something I one-on-one, like, personally worked on with the mental skills coach, Jay Barrett, around personal, like, goals and achievements within the race. Because when we, one, like, just glaring thing that pops out at me is within the Tuttawera Ultra, we assigned, like, the time and the placing, like, fifth place around 9 hours as my motivator and my goal. And you're allowed those. You can have those outcome-driven motivators. But then within the race, I had certain, like, goals and achievements I was trying to tick off. So, you know, heart rate, effort, nutrition, all of these things. And then it is all going super well until it wasn't. And now I'm running way slower. My heart rate's, like, way higher. And I'm getting passed. And I'm way off pace. And, like, and so what I could have done there was kind of given up in my head. Like, oh, well, I'll just do what I can, you know, the race is kind of over now, or pushed on and ended up like the 20 odd people I passed in the second half of the race. Instead, what I was able to do, so what is my goal today? My goal is to get the most out of myself, and what are the options I have for that? Push hard? Nope, been there before, definitely not an option. Chill out? No, I think actually if I just slow down a little bit and focus on, so what I was able to focus on, super applicable for like your situation, Matt, was relaxed as smooth and smooth as fast.
Phil Dunphy. Phil Dunphy quote, and, Modern Family.
And that, and so I was on the trail and I was like, let's just enjoy this. Can I push? Yeah, I'm feeling a bit better, you know, heart rate's coming down a bit. I know I need a drink, and there's all these things. And so I get out the other side of that section of the course, and then I'm, you know, bust out the section I trained a lot on, fifth fastest overall, closing, passing people, getting faster, brought the whole race back. I was, 14th overall, 10 hours, like an hour slower than I thought, like well outside of my place. And I was so proud of myself for that section. Whereas like, that is it. That is what, that's a win. Outside, like looking at everything else, it was kind of a loss, right? All of those outputs, all of my personal outputs were down. All of my performance and outcome goals were not achieved. But it, yet I had this huge sense of achievement for doing, like within the race, which is what you maybe didn't have there. And so you end up going, well, you know, if I'd end up in that situation, which I kind of had previously in the year previous, where I was like, I ended up third actually in the Taupo Ultra, and I wanted to go under 9 hours, and I went 9:17, and even though I came third, I didn't even care. I didn't even care about, that's one of those things where I was focused on my outputs. I didn't even care about the placing, which is, you know, something you think you need to do as well. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, but I didn't, like I was on and then I wasn't. And then, and so you kind of are like, oh, I'm just a little disappointed in myself.
That's crazy, because you get third and you're like not proud of yourself. And then another race, you get 14th. And if you're just looking at that number, maybe you should be more proud of the third. But
I should, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
And I was actually really upset. Because I had put so much into going under 9 hours on the Taupo course, and I was on, and I thought that maybe I thought I'd done stuff wrong to not get that time, right? To not get that out of myself, something I thought I was capable of. And was that reality? I don't know. How much can you plan for an ultra? There's a lot of factors go into it. But it was just a really horrible feeling to exert yourself and pull out what is like quite an incredible performance and a personal best for me, and then be really upset about it. Like, I'd never wanted to feel like that, but it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
It's super easy to do when you don't have those defined goals and performance outcomes all across the board, both like mentally, physically, like outcome, so that you can keep drawing those things out of it. And like what Jay talked about in his one, being mentally adaptable. Like, so when you don't have a race, you can go do your personal time trial or training endeavor and go, yeah, that was what I wanted to get out. It's like being like the complete athlete, really.
Yeah. So let's turn that one on its head a little bit, where you got third and you were kind of bummed about it. What if there were the two people that beat you, what if they just weren't there? Then how would you feel? You know, because you were already gutted that you didn't go under 9 hours.
Yeah.
And what would you be thinking, like, if the two people that beat you just didn't show up on that day and you had won and nothing was else was different, but you won? What would you think?
It would have been a different feeling, you know? Yeah. Winning's
everything. Is winning everything?
It's not, but it can be possibly hard to relate when you haven't won something outright. Right, but there is a certain sense of, and not necessarily like personal achievement, but external satisfaction, like that. So you get the accolades of the trophy or the medal or the pats on the back and the announcement and the interview at the end of the race. Like,
I didn't have any of those at our club race, just to be clear.
May have. You get printed in the results, like you're on the front page of the results section. Like there's a lot that kind of has you think that you've achieved something, and you have. Like there's no doubt. Like you beat everybody that was there on that day. So that helps to soften the blow, maybe. Yeah. And you can, but it's not everything.
No,
for sure. Like. There's this, there's certain just efforts where you must have some, Matt, where you're just so proud of yourself, and it didn't even, it probably because you dug yourself out of some a situation where you thought there's no way I'm coming back from this.
Yeah. And most of those aren't wins.
No
way. Like most of my proudest athletic moments were not wins. They were just like where I overcame something and pushed beyond what I had done before, and I had that feeling of, you know, maybe being in flow or something like that. But you know, I think it's kind of what we're getting to the bottom of is like winning isn't everything, and it feels really good when you do, but it doesn't happen all the time. So when it does happen, I think, you know, you should enjoy it. But also, you know, because it isn't everything and you know that you're not the champion of the world, just keep it in perspective and enjoy it for what it is and keep pressing on.
You can watch, I love watching sport, individual, like endurance sport especially. You'll still see them go, oh, yeah. But such and such wasn't here. And this could be like the world championships.
You can't do that at the world championships.
You know, but it doesn't even, it doesn't matter what level you're at. You can't assign winning or a specific time because you even don't know the kind of course or terrain to compare it against worldwide or even like personally between this and that. But then you just can't put the big weight on it. Like I see people potentially thinking that I will be judged off of either my time or my placing, right? And I won my age group. That's how good I am. It's like, well, yeah, again, like take that achievement because you did beat everyone in your age group, or you beat your time. But overall, you need to be able to look at like did you just go really fast, completely die, and then only just not get caught? Because it's not the way to get the most out of yourself. You could have achieved far more if you had paced appropriately. And if your goal was pacing appropriately and you didn't do that, but you still won, it's like, well, in terms of like your personal performance, like what you're able to exert throughout the event, you didn't achieve that. And there can be a lot to work on, and maybe you could win by a lot more. Or if you came second or third or whatever, and you didn't achieve your time, that's not necessarily a bad thing either because of those things. You may have paced appropriately, ticked all the boxes, and you still get that sense of achievement. And that's like control the controllables, you know. There's a lot of ways to go about it. And I'm no expert at like the stuff that Jay does with the mental skills and really assigning certain like tasks and achievements and all of that, but I've had enough experience working with athletes and myself to know that, yeah, definitely results are just really fickle when you forget about them quite quickly.
Yeah, and that's exactly, so that's the same kind of process that I go through with one of my athletes. Be like, okay, well, you know, for me, I'm training you, I'm looking for things that we can continuously improve. So I would say, well, I don't really, like, it's great that you won, and that's great, we would celebrate that, but then we would also look at all the information that we have, and just like any other race, maybe where we didn't win, we would use the same information and look for the same things and try and get better. So it just kind of comes back to this whole thing that improving as an athlete is a journey. And just because you win, it doesn't matter who was there, just because you lose, you know, focus on yourself and focus on things that you can do to improve, because you're the only one that you can control. So you don't know who will be there next time. You could win again. You maybe could get fifth again or last.
Yeah. And, you know, Matt, if you think about the pros or the elites and stuff that you work with, how many of them who have won races are like, yeah, I did everything perfect. I'm completely satisfied with my training. I don't need to work on anything.
Yeah, that'd be an incredibly poor mindset, right?
But none of them. Like, so anyone who wins something is like, yeah, I could have. It's just not, like, maybe we can see outwardly, like, oh, wow, that person won. They must have had the best race. You know, they must have achieved everything they wanted to. I bet they didn't.
No. Yeah, there's always things to work on, always things to improve.
Yeah, and you will always not have the perfect race.
Yep.
There's no such thing as a perfect race. Yeah, it can get close, but it will be, yeah, it won't be enough. But that's kind of what we wanted to go over this week, right? It's just like, you know, Matt is a champion, okay, but. He's still got some work on.
Yeah. I mean, I'll still be out there, even though I'm a champion. I'm still going to be out there training today once the sun comes out and it stops raining. And, you know, if I don't make it today, I'll be out there tomorrow working on it.
Well, Matt, the other thing is, if you start to assign your value or your, like, your achievement to that win, now all those four guys are going to turn up again. You know, there might not be a road race, and you're going to think, oh, well, now I only came fourth.
Yeah. No, actually, honestly, I hope they do show up. So take some pressure off me.
They'll be like, Matt Muller, defending champion, return. I'll read about it in the newspaper, yeah, I'm sure.
We'll see. Well, thanks for talking that over with me, Will. And, you know, from one champion to another, I'll see you next week.
Oh, no. I don't want to include that. All right, guys. Have a good week of training. Next week, we have a really cool special guest to talk about some of these cheetah shoes and the science behind them, if they actually make you faster or not. So keep an eye out for episode 61. Till then, though, follow us on social media. Check out the course on performanceadvantagepodcast.com. Follow us, share it, just put it out there. If you can just share this with one person who you think would appreciate it, that helps us get the word out, helps us grow. And until next time.